Are you in your winter whites, Clemmy?
I am actually put this t-shirt on just for you, Lou.
So I really put a white shirt on. I was like, no, don't hammer it too hard.
Because you know, I literally will always think of you if I put white on in the winter.
I will always think of you. I'm going to have to get your number and text you an emoji saying it's a day. I've gone for double cords, double cream cords.
You've got to have a good stain remover or just not care that much. And I quite often have spills down my front. Hello and welcome to another episode of But Why, the podcast that's all about digging into big questions and tricky topics via honest conversations. This week we're going to be looking at comparison, and there would be only one person who would be right to talk to about that, and that is Lucy Sheridan. Lucy is accredited by the Association for Psychological Therapies and the world's first and only comparison coach. The Times called her one of the UK's most successful coaches. She pushes out this gorgeous big sister energy through a private practice and workshop on Instagram, and has helped thousands of people go from comparing despair to comparison free. Lucy, I always like to start with three, not that important, but quite fun questions. How are you really? What star sign are you, and your favourite crisps?
Oh my God. Well, how am I really coming up? It's been a bit of a tough month. I don't mind kind of sharing with friends here. Received a postnatal depression diagnosis in September. And big information, but also an incredible relief, because if you'll forgive the clumsy language, I thought I was going mad. So spoke to a doctor, was in really well listened to, felt very received in that space. And I've really been coming up since then. I have a 13-month-old, so that's meant that there's been a lot of big conversations in my marriage as well. There's been a lot going on. It's been a bit of a boot camp, Clemmy, truth be told. But to answer your question, I am coming up. I'm so close to the surface, I'll gasp that air in a second. My astrology is Leo Sun. I'm a Libra moon, Pisces rising, and I'm a generator human design. Have that one for a bonus. And then favourite crisps, it's got to be, if there was to be a crunch match, it would be the salt and vinegar hula hoops, because I've got that vinegary thing that I would still eat off my fingers, even though I'm 40 in a few months. That or a big bad lad like a McCoy's beefy crinkle cut. You know, a really chewy, potatoey bad lad. So that you know, easily. Actually, it would be the bad lad. It would be the beefy McCoy's.
I mean, Lucy, have you thought about an alternative career of voiceover for crisp adverts? Because I feel like perhaps that was actually your calling.
If I had an agent, I'd say talk to my agent. But in the absence of that, just drop me a DM. There's always a conversation to be had.
Crisps are just great. This is what we must never forget.
Simple pleasures, right?
Yeah, especially. And I'm really sorry that you've had a tough ride. Thanks, mate. Now you say that, it doesn't feel like that new news for me, because I feel like, yeah, your sparkle wasn't as sparkly in the last 30 months.
Hard. Yeah, hope it's not TMI. I don't think it is for a but why conversation. But hey, no. I'd always intend to give an honest answer to an honest question, right? It felt important to be real.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because I had kids a bit younger than you, and I always thought to myself, oh, if I'd have done all the self-work before I'd had kids, maybe it would have prevented my first year feeling the way yours has. But it just shows you that you can never know when that's going to come
absolutely not. And also, you know, because it's like chemical, physiological, but the other side of that is my mind was started, like the spiral was starting to really pick up momentum down around July, August last year. But because I have like done the seminars, done the courses, do the work, etc., like, you know, work big W, the inside stuff. I then started to critique myself as in, well, why can't you be a bit more positive? Like, maybe you should just do a bit more self-care. But it's actually, I was having a physiological experience, like quite literally my serotonin was, technical term, on its ass. you can't meditate into that, you can't affirm into that, you can't transcendental this, that and the other, or cacao, or even ayahuasca yourself into that when you're in that state. So it was a bit of a double-edged sword, actually, because I knew all the stuff, but then I turned that into judgment on myself of, well, you should feel better, you know, be a bit more present. And it's like, it just didn't work at the end. So actually, and hopefully it's not TMI, but when I did speak to the doctor, they, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, she was lovely. She said, look, this is pretty clockwork. What do you want to do? There are a number of different routes. And she talked me through talking therapy and all this. Then she was like, oh, there's the prescriptive route. And she talked me through that as well. I was like, it's absolutely prescriptive route. This is not something is going on in my unconscious brain that I need to unpick. This is happening to me on a physiological level, and I now release the need to have to sort it out. And, you know, God bless Western medicine, pop me that prescription, hun, and I'll nip down to next door to the bakery and pick it up.
Yeah, and begin to come back out of it. And it must feel, as you say, you might not be head above the water yet, but at least you can see where the surface of that water is.
Yeah. And I think too, like, I can feel there's been quite a few changes for me personally in terms of, like, this year, my husband's decided to go back to work where he was kind of pursuing a different route because he needs it. He needs the stimulus. He needs the people. We live, and I joke about on the hill, but I'm from Leeds, but we live in the, like, near the Peak District. And so we don't have, like, we have friends around here who are lovely, but we don't have a support system of people that can, like, watch Saoirse, my daughter, for like a couple of hours while we do laundry. Or it's been absolutely a transactional tag teaming for over a year, and unsurprisingly, it starts to wear down. So we have recently brought a nanny in, Katie, who is absolutely amazing. She started doing a couple of, like, one day a couple of weeks ago, 2 days this week, 3 days will be next week. And I think it was yesterday, Clemmy, for the first time in, if I'm honest, probably a couple of years, I woke up and the elephant that's been sitting on my chest had finally got off. And I could even be like, I feel almost euphoric just by the absence of the stress, the absence of the worry. And to think about what my nervous system has had to be going through, because now I can feel the absence of it. I'm not skipping through a meadow, punching the air. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm very much kind of getting back to zero, but I am euphoric. I could stay at zero now forever and a day, because having been to, like, that other side, the appreciation for good days, even if they're now in the mix and they're not here to stay, it's completely given me a new equilibrium of what it is to feel okay in myself. And it's been, yeah, a wild ride.
It is. There is nothing like it. Whether, and ever, you know, I reflect on my first baby and it's like, did I have postnatal depression? I do probably reflect that I did, but whatever it is, it's just like, you're just trying to peace, you're just trying to make yourself better, and it's impossible to know what levers to pull. And as you say, if the lever is chemical,
And I think too, for those amongst us that are astro curious, and that's definitely you and I, Clemmy, I've also been going through Pluto square Pluto, which is the big midlife transit that happens between 38 and 42. And I am literally coming out of it as we record this live on a Friday. I am literally coming out of it on Monday, and it's been like 13 or 14 months. And, you know, like I say, any of us that are astro curious, and I'm not very fluent, but I know enough to be able to, like, you know, chew your ear off if you're unlucky to sit next to me at a wedding or something. But Pluto is the planet of depth, not just that, depths and the darkness. It's almost the underworld. And that has been a very unwelcome companion as well. You know, I'm not saying it caused anything. It's a planet in the sky. I'm not presenting any of this as facts to you, Clemmy, or anyone listening today, but I am astro curious, and I do experience the astrology. Like, any of us that are open to it would probably agree they do too. But Pluto square Pluto, if you are between the age of 38 and 42, and I'm pretty much bang on, like I said, 14 a few months, it's worth looking into if you've got the Chani app or you just want to go on Google, because that might explain some things as well, because there are some things that I would have loved to just sweep away or get to, and I've had to be unflinching, but alas, there's been lots of flinching, and it's been a little bit bruising as well, in terms of things that I just have not been able to avoid have had to be addressed too. And it's it's yeah, not always been my finest hour. I will say that. But coming through the other side of it, like I get why it happens at this time, because about to hit this threshold birthday, and it is a threshold, isn't it? Literally walking from one decade into another. Mm-hmm. I can see why I've had to address it now. Because, you know, I heard this wonderful expression once, which is your 40s are for your fortune. And that doesn't have to be material or monetary, but that's it. I really do want to hold on to more of what's valuable outside of it, but I want to hold on to what's and value more of what's valuable in this next decade. And I've definitely been through the boot camp of how that works. Woo!
It's so funny you say that, because I've too, I think I'm almost at the end of it. And on my 40th, I had a my birth chart read, which is weird. It was booked for my 39th. And then because of life, I didn't do it and ended up doing 40th.
Yeah.
And she said to me, you are in the cave. You're in the cave. Stop fearing the cave. Accept it.
Yeah.
And don't try and do anything. And it was really, really good advice. But I know exactly what you're referring to. I think we're all quite, if you're astrologically curious, well-versed in the Saturn return. But this is exactly the same thing, where every single element of your life, when you feel like you're old enough to know better, becomes turned over. It's really brutal, but it's
gross. It is. And you give great advice there, as in, like, don't resist the cave. I did. And I was like, I don't want to. I was very happy. This isn't fair. I'm not ready. Yeah, like, who's left me? Where are the keys out? And the minute I was like, okay, can we just hit the bottom? Because this free fall, and like, I'm mixing analogies now, forgive me. But I was like, can I just hit the bottom? Because there I know at least that I can go up from there. But it is very confronting. But I would also say this, there's nothing to fear. And that sounds like it doesn't, it can't, that there's polarity there, isn't it? It's very confronting, can feel painful. I use the word bruising and brutal, if you'll forgive me. I am prone to drama. And yet there is nothing to fear. Because it's like, it really is. I can see now, I'm close enough to the end that I'm starting to feel 1% philosophical about, holy moly, am I going to be able to use a lot of this? Or holy moly, has this been very rude about experiencing like who I really am and how I really tick? But my word, there's no change in it now. So better work with it.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. It's definitely that thing of no longer being able to avoid who you really are, and ultimately finding acceptance of that. And I will move off from this. But I did,
yes.
After learning about this, I then did a quick kind of tally of my friends and when their parents got divorced, you know, because we're a generation of a lot of parents, so many of them during this period of time, like, oh, yeah, they're around about 40. Mm. Oh, right.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I would say, like, I definitely haven't had my finest hour in my role as wife. But I would say my recovery from it has been one of my finest hours, actually, because there's this won't be for everyone, but there's a metaphysical text course called A Course in Miracles. And I'm going to just paraphrase one of the teachings in the book. And that is the only thing missing from any situation is what you're not bringing. And that, again, feels quite confronting. But when I've been like to my husband, you need to be more understanding, you need to be more present, you are so oblivious, like the world just ends at the end of your nose, that's what you think, like, just really, like I say, not my finest hour. And yet when I look at, my goodness, if I turn that conversation back to myself, he would be absolutely in his right to say all those things to me. So it started with things like me feeling bored and ignored. And so when he talked to me, I put my phone down instead of treating him like he was some sort of admin helper in the house, you know, instead of feeling like I wish he just knew to help out or this. Or I feel like I started to say, I'm feeling a bit like this now. So it really helped me out if you could do this. Like, please, can you remember for next time? Because he wants to help, he wants to be a good partner, like I want to help and I want to be a good partner. But yeah, I can totally see how lots of relationships don't make it, because there is no, I was joking with a pal, you have a blazing row and then you've got to like feed the child together or do bath time or ask if they've got any whites to put in the wash. You know, it's like there's no going off to the pub or, you know, off in a huff upstairs to meditate. It's like you've got to be fuming and functioning, which could be a new book, couldn't it? Fuming and functioning.
Yeah, and I think it's a real, for me, and I relate to absolutely everything you're saying, there's also this dialogue in my head is like, how have you become this? How is this like resentful couple? Yeah. Like slamming around the children or trying not to. It's like everything we work so hard not to be, and then you're there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, promising not to be transactional, but actually it sort of needs it, because it's the only way I have felt, you know, it's been the only way I can measure some sort of balance and some sort of fairness. So again, like, I mean, all the cliches are true, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I mean, I think actually to turn this on the conversation of comparison and like three, four questions down, I was going to say to you, how has motherhood been a if motherhood has been a comparison trigger, and how?
Yeah, it's been interesting for me because, like I say, like where I live, it's not remote, but it is rural. And so I haven't so much compared to other parents because I haven't been around enough of them to compare. Like my village has been very, you know, people say it takes a village. My village has kind of been WhatsApp, really, and family members and a couple of neighbours around here that have, you know, checked in on me. But it has, I haven't necessarily gone to loads of groups or had a routine because I went back to work after 3 months, shouldn't have done. That was too early, but that's for another time. And also the nature of me getting my business back up and running, I was, you know, on Zoom way before it was cool, so there was elements of I would kind of like have the baby and then go to her dad and then I'd get her back again and go for a walk. So I haven't had comparison, I haven't any source of comparison really for other people, and even online I've been, you know, trying to protect myself a little bit there. But where comparison really kicked in for me was one of the lesser acknowledged comparisons around who I thought I should be, where I thought I should be, and what I thought I should be doing. So things like, so she's 13 months and like she's just on sort of like mushy banana, because I've been too scared to like go for the toast, go for the carrot, because again, we live on a hill. So if anything happened, I'd be really worried about could I handle it. And so there's been that. And yet when she's had the banana, she's gobbled it. I'm like, oh God, am I slowing her down? Or equally, it took a while to get, you know, like a pet, like a, we call it the baby jail, but like a play area sorted for her. And when we did, she immediately started crawling. I was like, oh my gosh, has she been wanting to crawl this time and I didn't know? So there's been a lot of comparison to where I thought I should be or would be, or like, you know, the sort of mother I'd be and how present and thoughts things we'd be doing, when actually I've been, you know, I haven't really touched on a lot of that stuff. And I've judged myself a lot. You know, if you only knew more, if you knew as much as them, or if you knew, you know, if you'd read the book like you said you were going to do, or, you know, if you just bought that thing off Amazon. That's where I've kind of been caught in a comparison trap quite seriously recently, actually.
But you know, I really remember on my first maternity leave walking around thinking, oh, all these mothers know what they're doing more than me. But the chances are, unless it was their subsequent children, actually they probably knew every bit as little as I did. And, you know, we're very good at pretending.
Yeah. That's it, isn't it? And not as well, like, there's a lot of pressure and there's a lot of, you know, obviously recommendations about certain routines and certain ways of doing things. We're quite free-flowing with Saoirse in that we sort of let her lead on things. We're really, really blessed that she's slept since early dawn, like since early days. So there's an element of like, somebody like, oh, you know, well, I'll put the baby to bed at 7 o'clock and then I'll go and do this. I'm like, well, I'm probably going to play with her till about 8, see how she's doing about 9, then we'll go to bed and read at 10 and she'll fall asleep. But equally, I'm like, but if I don't get her in a routine, she's not going to be able to. And it's like you say, other parents are doing what they have to do to have a good night's sleep. I'm doing what I have to do at the moment. And, you know, she's with me and I'm, you know, I'm trying my best and she knows she's loved. And I think that's what I keep coming back to in terms of the measures, and not what's going on social media or the steps I have or haven't taken or where her routine is or where her routine isn't. But like, does she feel loved? Does she, you know, when she cries, she'll get picked up no matter what's going on. Do you know what I mean? Like, she knows that, like, she's confident with the dogs, that sort of thing. It's having to really try and think of what are my measures to make sure that we're all on track as a family here. Because, you know, the self-judgment that can go on and putting yourself under the monocle can just be exhausting, and it gets us nowhere.
It does. And the thing is, I mean, you have, again, with subsequent children, you've got the proof to yourself that you've kept a human alive for whatever long, and eventually they flip, and eventually they eat. And there is all those cliches. One day, all your kids will eat will be pesto pasta and fish fingers and chips, and you can get there in whatever route you like. But ultimately, you survey a six-year-old, and they're all eating versions of the same thing.
Yeah,
and it's like, right. Oh God, well, wish I hadn't have bothered with this. Like, yeah, the toil of what I should and shouldn't be doing.
Yeah. Mashing sardines into a potato or whatever.
How many 30-year-olds do you meet who are only eating mashed up banana? None. So probably...
Exactly. Any day now.
it's so bonkers, but that's it. And, you know, if you've tried to be successful in any other part of your life, and then you try and put your rules for success or your ways of being successful into parenting, and they don't stick because they've no manual. It's really disorientating, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really, really is. And I think it sounds like a platitude to say we have to go gently, but we sort of do, because I've noticed, well, like, you know, the spiral can be pretty hard. I remember, like, early days, and I was, Search had had a jab, and so I was giving her a little bit of Calpol through, like, but they gave us a syringe. Obviously, she has a really small mouth, and I was holding the syringe, and for some reason, it was a little bit, slow, so I just kept applied pressure to it, thinking, oh, it must be going slowly, and then it kind of jolted, and like all of the Calpol went to mouth, and then she was sick. And I remember like becoming almost hysterical, you know, and you know, that was say like 4 o'clock, and it obviously ruined the rest of the day. But I woke up the next day and was like, can we just put this down to the first what feels like an F up? Can we just chalk it down to that and let's get to 10 o'clock, let's get to lunchtime, let's get to countdown, do you know, like, let's get to 5 p.m. and just take a step back. And whenever I find that, whether it's I'm in a comparison spiral and I just need to give myself some space, or I'm not feeling like I'm not feeling great in myself, or I'm not feeling like I'm getting the Mum of the Year award or whatever, these things, if I'm not feeling great, I go back to, right, an hour at a time, not even a day or a week at a time, an hour at a time. Because it just gives me oxygen, and because I'm just very aware of how the spiral, having been there before, how the spiral can take me down. So I really do try and not keep myself in a tight rein, but just keep myself in like a nice little pen of time when it feels like I'm not as steady on my feet as I'd like to be.
It's such good advice, and it you know, we do know that when life comes down to living by the hour, that it means things are tough, but actually you do living by an hour for a week, and then the next day you're doing living by half days, and then slowly you come out the other way, don't you?
And that's it. Yeah, absolutely right.
So you are the world's first and only comparison coach. What led you to that? Well, first of all, I think we've jumped a few guns. Like, what do you, I know we all understand what comparison is, but how do you frame it in your mind?
Well, I look at it as really making sure that when it comes to comparison, I get that sometimes comparing ourselves can be inspiring, but that really is for about 2-3% of the population. And I look at comparison as something which ultimately takes us off path, whether that is literally distracts us from the task we should be doing, you know, so we can leave the house on time, right through to bringing into question all of our abilities, our own wants, our own needs, and even, you know, whether we are enough as a human being. And that's why for me, comparison has three parts to it, really. There's the comparison to other people, there's comparison to our past self, or a biggie that I've been talking a lot about recently, comparison to who we think we should be, or the biggie is comparison to our past selves. Before COVID, I used to be able to do this. When I was in my late 20s, I'd be feeling this. When I was in my other job, I didn't find this hard. When I was friends with this person, this would come up for me. And, you know, sometimes it is being a bit too nostalgic, but actually this reverting back to the person that we're not anymore, because we are right here fully formed. I'm finding it's being particularly insidious at the moment because of this strange time that we're emerging into. But ultimately, whatever comparison we might be experiencing, it's down to three things that we need to make sure are as high for us as possible. That is our sense of self-worth, how much we believe we deserve to be here and deserve to have what we want in life. Our self-confidence, so why would you call this the fuel to then go after that and, you know, go after that and then look after that confidence to drive ourselves forward. And then there's a third one, which is self-focus. And this is the doing the thing, the sticking to the plan, the playing to our strengths then if the plan is unclear there. So self-worth, self-confidence and self-focus. And they are the things we need to, like I say, if they were on a dial, and make sure they're as high as possible, because the higher they are, the more oxygen we cut off to comparison.
Yeah, I was reading some of the work that you've done, and it's like this idea that we're literally wasting our precious time on focusing on other people or versions of us that don't exist. And that really resonated for me. Every time, you know, we always end up talking about social media, but when you're looking at someone else's holiday, it's completely wasted energy. Yes, as you say, there's a little percentage where sometimes a little bit of comparison nudges you on, but that feels like it's a very different thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, it is wasted energy. And that's why, for me, it's not helpful to put us, because you're right, social media is such an important part of it, because speaking by substance, if we weren't talking about it. And for me, I wouldn't necessarily, if we're trying to get out of comparison, I wouldn't necessarily advise like digital detoxes, for example, or like, you know, cutting ties and following every person under the sun. For me, I would say a bit like, you know, when a toddler has a tantrum or you really fancy a pizza and you're like, here I go, let's go in, extra pepperoni, extra this, extra that, whatever it is. Let yourself like burn through it, like burn through the fuel. So if you're feeling a spot of comparison, rather than sort of checking in on a few accounts occasionally, block off an hour and really go there. Really, really, forensically, detective emoji, go there and get it out of your system. Get it out of your system. Write down everything it's making you feel. Write down everything it's making you question. Write down everything that it is making you doubt, but making you believe about yourself. And then flip the paper and be open to what's actually true. So what is that information then able to tell you? What can be your pathway towards your version of that fulfillment, that contentment, having those options? And then we start to see the formation of your own authentic plan in your language and based on your wants and your needs. Because here's the thing about comparison, we do it. It's like putting a hot, you know, a hand on a hot stove, but like, oh, I actually can feel my skin dissolving now, but I'll just keep it here for 5 more minutes because, you know, we know it doesn't necessarily do us any good at all. So if we're going to do it right, like really go for it. And then that's it. That's it. You turn your back and you use the information. And it might be you have to put little, you know, steps in place for you to support you using the information. You know, I wish I was more confident in this area. My goodness, what I do to be able to take my kids to Disneyland. I wish my job made me feel like this. You know, if you get to those realizations that are in the I, as in the I and the me and the where I'm from, if you can get to those realizations, plans can come from there. And then of course make helpful choices with social media. So things like you might you know, put a few people on mute for a while. You might, when it comes to you realizing you're not just clicking on the post, you click on the account, you throw your phone across the throw your phone across the room, or you go back and look at your favorite puppy account or something like that. I, for example, have all my social media in a folder on my phone, you know, screen, and but it's, they're all in a folder called really ? And I move the folder around every couple of weeks, so I don't have the muscle memory of finding it. So if I'm, you know, when I should be finishing an email or should be, you know, doing some washing or doing anything but being on social media, rather than having the muscle memory of going to it, I actually have to, oh, I've interrupted myself here and I can go back to the task. I think, look, I'll check. Social media is going to be there in 10 minutes when I've sent this important email that would really help my business or, you know, really help me move forward with a party plan or whatever it is. And so it's like having that dialogue with ourselves. It's not, you know, it really, really like being as conscious about it as possible, choosing again, choosing again, choosing again. And what we'll find there, because there's no switch to comparison. There's no, I felt like this and now I don't feel like it. Fantastic. stick, you know, in my book or in my work. I'm like, right, you just need to go behind your ear. There's this switch. Can you feel it? Right, just press that. Like, I wish there was. We edge away from comparison. We edge further towards ourselves. We edge further inside to what's true for us. And if we can be open to that edging, that those edges compound and they get stronger. And what we'll notice, and this is the big, like, you know, fireworks in the sky moment you want to aim to get to, is you just don't care that much anymore. You don't have to love that person from school that's always sort of got on your tits, excuse my language, or always been a bit of like riled you up a bit. You don't have to love the content of that person on Instagram that has made you feel like your house is an absolute trash bag and what's the point. You don't have to love them and support them and write them a letter about how inspiring they are. You just want to get to not really caring that much. I know when my comparison work is working for me, because my goodness, teach what you need to learn, hon, is when I don't know what someone's doing. Like, you know, when I notice I've been all over their feed like a rash, or maybe, you know, in my more sinister moments, maybe even asking about them on WhatsApp. Oh, have you seen what, you know, Amy's doing recently? Just high-pitched and curious when really I'm mining for info. I'll out my ego. I do it. You know, I do it. I know when I'm back in my own lane because there's the absence of any interest. Not because hypothetical Amy, I wish any ill will to hypothetical Amy, but just it's not important to me. You know, be safe, be well, off you go, hon. But it's not important to me because I'm in my own lane. But the big thing is it does take a bit of work. It takes a little bit of consistency. We have to have our own rules, our own criteria in place. Like any, like reframing any habit, like moving forward with anything, we have to have a bit of a plan in place that protects the effort that we're making. Because I, you know, whether you're 40 or not, there's a really good chance it's that if you're listening to this, like you're curious about who you are and you know who you are to a point as well. What are your strengths? Play to those. Because like when it comes to healing our own comparison, and it is a healing, if we play to our strengths, we are more of who we are. And then we can take more aligned action. We have more ideas, or we seek out more opportunities, or we are maybe more, have a bit more courage in a certain area, or to do a thing or to say a certain thing. And all this, again, moves us closer to who we are and what we're supposed to be doing and who we're supposed to be ultimately, and away from comparison. But it's done. I can see now after 10 years of doing this work, we edge until we get to a place of, I just don't care. And that's a really lovely place to be. And you'll know you're there because you'll have got all your time back. You'll have got all your ideas back. You'll have might have a notebook of to-do lists, but actually there are some things being ticked off. So it'll be kind of maybe quite subtle when you know you've done it, in that you're like, you've really allowed the pendulum to swing away from comparison. But just because it's subtle doesn't mean it isn't absolutely glorious.
It's so funny. I love hearing you talk about this because I think comparison is something, because when I've said this to you before, when I first heard of your work, I was like, oh, you know, it's interesting, not really me. And then you get real about it and look how much you're doing it. And we've discussed it before, but it often happens, you know, in families, between siblings, between colleagues, between everything. And then you begin to see, actually, it's absolutely woven into everything that we do. But
yeah,
absolutely. As you were talking, one thing that came to mind is this classic thing that I do when, again, on social, but in anything, we're like, oh, why wasn't I invited to that? And then I go to myself, do you want to be invited? And I think there's an interesting thing in comparison where sometimes I try and be better at trying on those clothes. So that job that you think you're envious of, would you want to be getting on a train every day in order to get that salary, in order to have that money to go on that holiday? Oh, no, you wouldn't. Right. Well, yeah, the reason that isn't your journey is because it isn't your journey.
And that's gold, Clemmy, because you've hit on a really important point is if you want the thing, you have to have it all. You have to have it all. You know, it's like, so if they, you know, have taken an amazing adventure, well, they're doing that because they've been talking about how they've been in crisis because they had a divorce, and they had a divorce because their partner unfortunately went away with someone else. So it's like, okay, if you want the adventure, but would you take it all? No thanks. I'd rather have my own path there and take the inspiration that's something that I want to have, because it, it and because, like I say, it's just not that simple. We make it think like it is simple. Oh, if I could just do that. And on your point about like, why didn't I get invited to that? Something I have come to realize now, because that's such a tender one for me too, that just won't really go away, truth be told, is I realize when I feel that moment, I'm not me in my kitchen waiting for a cup of tea, scrolling the internet. I'm 12. Oh, I'm actually 12. In a playground, or I'm 12 hearing about girls talking about they went to the cinema at the weekend and I didn't go. I'm 12. And so what that immediately means is, right, big sister energy. And it's like, you know, and then I go to that part myself, you've got loads of friends. It was just one party. This happens to other people too. You get invited to things and they feel this way. So let's just have lots of compassion and know when the next invite comes along, it's going to be great. What are you going to wear? But I really do like immediately turn to that part of myself and like, we know what's really going on here. And it's got nothing to do with those incredibly dressed people at Soho House. It's got nothing to do with that. It's got everything to do with being 12. And yeah, exactly. And it is that moment, isn't it? Of like, we want to just like give ourselves a hug. And that's what we need to do. We need to give ourselves a hug. Because just like, you know, those stacking dolls, there are parts of our lives that stay with us, even though outwardly we get older. there are parts of our lives that stay with us. Just like perhaps if we might want to go after something, and we're like, why doesn't this feel right? It's like, oh, that's not mine. That's something my dad said to me when I was doing my A-levels, or that's something a boss said to me when they were really cross at me for something that I actually didn't do. You know, it's like one of my big I'm not good enough that my inner critic will kind of throw at me. It's like, you just haven't got enough gravitas for this. Like, you just haven't got enough, you know, like presence for this, to do this. And that's because in one of my old jobs, what used to come up in appraisals quite a bit was, you've got to work on your gravitas. Now, I'm not saying that wasn't right. I'm not. But they also used to say it to like everyone of a certain kind of level. And we've got a feeling it was just to kind of keep us, you know, going. Anyway, that's for another time. Fair enough. Whatever. It's ancient history. It's all good. I've unpicked a lot of that with my therapist. But whenever I go to then like, launch an idea, approach someone about something, or like, you know, even accept invitations like this, I'm like, oh God, but have I got like, you know, have I got the power to be there and actually make a contribution? Do I have the confidence? Why would people want to listen to me? I'm like, oh, that's not mine. That was the feedback I was given when I was 26, maybe 27 years old. So of course I didn't probably have much gravitas, because I was 26, 27 years old. You know what I mean? So it's like, show me someone that does. So again, I've been able to go around that now. And it's now not about they were mean to me, which is what it felt like. It was that I didn't quite get it. It wasn't delivered in perhaps the best way. So there's like no hard feelings anymore. Do you know what I mean? Mm. But again, in that moment of like, I'm not invited, I feel 12. And in that, I'm not good enough, I'm not ready. I'm actually, that was 15 years ago. No, yeah. And it's just interesting what that can give us. And sometimes like, yes, but I still do feel it. But that said, it's helpful to know it's based on absolutely nothing to do with who we are now and what we're doing now.
Yeah, that's so true. It's such, I just want to say, because it's off the record, but I think you're so, for me, and I've said it to you actually over email, I always think you launch everything in such a professional kind of way with gravitas. So actually, maybe, like, not that we ever want to think that those kind of criticisms are good. I think probably the consequence of that is you have constantly pushed yourself to a place. So they're
that's
wrong,
really
basically.
Kind, thank you. And I will receive that, even though my intel's go, I'm not sure, but I'm going to receive that. Thank you. And perhaps, yeah, it makes me put through a few more checks, ask a few more questions than it might have done otherwise. Yeah, so maybe I'm getting to benefit from that.
I do wonder. That's maybe like the 1% where, 1%
and it's
useful.
A good thing,
Something that I wanted to pick up on, that again I've heard you say before, and the first time I heard it I was like, whoa. And it's accepting that the chances are that you are somebody else's comparison trigger.
Absolutely. I would go as far to say I can guarantee it. If people were brave enough to tell me in an anonymous poll, like, whoever you are if I was to do an anonymous poll, I know that at least everyone would have at least one as a comparison trigger. Because it may be that, for example, you were used as an example of someone doing well at school. Why can't you be more like Clemmie? You know, like, why can't you play with Clemmie? Because a parent was like, put that comparison in early days. Or perhaps it is someone kind of like seeing how you present things in meetings, or seeing how you parent, or seeing how you take lovely pictures for social media, or your singing voice, or the jokes you tell, or whatever, your fashion sense. It could be anything. That's the thing about comparison. No two are alike. I could lay down my comparisons next to yours. You'd be like, really? What? Have you met you? And you lay down your comparison. I'm like, Clemmie, are you bananas in pyjamas? What? You know, have you met you? And we wouldn't be able to compute it. And that's the thing. It doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. And you will definitely be someone's comparison source, let's say. And there's nothing you can do about it. And there's nothing you must try to do about it either. Because otherwise we're going to get smaller and smaller and more apologetic and more tentative. And less ourselves, and we mustn't let that happen, especially when some of us have got children watching. That's something I'm really aware of now, is that if my daughter can see me as much in full bloom as possible, that's the biggest gift I can give her.
Oh, it's so funny. I have my daughter's, my youngest kid, who's, she's in reception, and I've had her first parents evening last night, and you know, they said she's in reception, and she said, oh, she's gorgeous and she's a firecracker and she really knows her mind. And I, you know, that's a huge compliment, but again, and I don't know if it's female, but I think that kind of language in our generation could have been seen as a criticism, and the teacher wasn't, it was a compliment. But it's so interesting, isn't it, that we're sometimes told some of our brilliant traits, where we do take up space, and where we do take the lead role, it's negative, and it's not.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's the double punch, isn't it? It's like, oh, don't want to interfere, but I know better. You know, it's like this layer of like, there's that expression that conscious parenting, which is such a place to aim for. Even if you're like, that wouldn't have happened to me. Like, that's still conscious parenting. Like, that's the healing that's happening there. Yeah. I had a similar thing with my little girl was playing, and she was being quite physical with the other little girl, who was, they were totally just a match of energy. But I was like, I wanted to be like, oh no, please share. Oh no, I'm like, no, let them. They're figuring this out themselves. They, like, she's obviously not being rude, because lots of giggling going on here. But, you know, there I was like, oh, don't, you know, I don't want to be overbearing. I don't want the other mum to think that I don't. And it's like, no, the other mum will think whatever she wants. But Saoirse needs to know that I'm going to sit back and think, right, what's going on here then, kid? You know, and that, even then I was like, whoa, like mind blown emoji. That felt like such a milestone moment of, wow, it's okay for me to be the observer here. And of course I'll step in. I don't want her to be, you know, a little snot rag to anybody. You know, she's expressing herself. Will you just give her the toy? No, absolutely not. But let it get there before me jumping in. Can't prevent the behaviour before it's happened, you know?
No, and also if we step back, like, can a 13-month-old really be overbearing? Because they're just being a very curious, physical, tiny human.
Exactly. Exactly that.
And yeah, but it's so interesting. I definitely think with raising kids, it's like when things are really encouraged, like, you know, outspoken girls particularly, and then for some reason that becomes bossy, or that becomes, you know, ambitious isn't good, and it's just like, oh no, what we're going to try and do is hold on to all those wonderful traits for as long as possible.
That's it, and do better at managing our discomfort as opposed to, like, squashing it. I mean, more on this soon, reader. Let's see how we get on. I'm only 13 months in, kid. Do you know what I mean?
You've got a real journey for that. But I think, these are all the things that parenting shines on us. So tell me, a little bit more, I guess, about what comparison, not comparison free, because we never try and aim for finite things if we're human, but like a life with less comparison can look like.
I think to sum it up, it would be like better quality. So spending your time more intentionally because time doesn't get away from you and you don't feel as scatty because you're not wondering what other people are doing or doubting yourself or on social media for 2 hours, like with your phone literally warm to the touch when you could be, you know, polishing up your LinkedIn or planning a nice meal for your partner or, you know, taking yourself on a day or Googling some training or like a hobby you want to do. Like the quality of our lives just incredibly increases when we're not comparing. So getting that time back, getting that focus back, not having the wobbly worries. Yes, there's elements of, oh, I feel a bit nervous about this because, you know, not comparing doesn't make us unflappable. Certainly, I certainly have flappable moments, you know, absolutely. But I know when I'm not comparing, those fears and worries are mine and they don't have the edge of who am I to, you know, and I can concentrate on that. So the quality of our lives goes up so much, the quality of the conversations we have, the quality of who we are and what we do, how much of, you know, what we do as well is completely ours. So not how would someone else do this? Or it, that looks popular, I should do it that way. We stay in our own lane. So we become, we can rely on that because that's another thing. You might master, you know, emulating or following the footsteps of someone, but what happens when the trend changes? What happens if they change their mind? Calls into question again everything you've been doing, everything you've done. That's another thing why it's so important. When we're not comparing, trends can come and go. Trends can be exciting things to try, or we can, you know, look at opportunities a different way, but we do it in our own way. Because when we're not comparing, we always know our next thought, even if it may not be the best thought, but it's ours. If you're stuck in comparison, you're constantly ranking and analysing against other people. Mm-hmm. And I think too, like, you know, because there are different types of comparison in terms of, you might be a generalist, which I call a scanner. And so you're comparing all the time in all different ways. You're literally scanning your environment. Oh, I like that coat on the tube. Oh, I think they've lost weight. Oh, are they cleverer than me at the school gates? Whatever it is, that's always going on. Then it might be that you're a scout. So you're comparing lots of different ways to people that you know, though. So maybe a friendship group or a work cohort or, you know, people that, you know, you did a course with once and you know them, but you're comparing all different ways there too. Then there's one which has been particularly tricky for me. There is being the archer when it comes to comparisons. That is comparing yourself to people you don't necessarily know at all, but comparing the very specific way to their family. You know, someone on the internet, comparing them to their house, comparing your work life to that friend of a friend that you met once at a wedding and just sort of blew your socks off because they made life look easy. And then there's the squirrel of comparison, and that's comparing in one single way, but perhaps to a best mate, to a partner, to a family member, to a colleague, so someone you actually do know. Now, no matter how you do compare, whenever you're focusing on that, you can't be focusing on yourself, and we become less of ourselves, and we become impatient in our most important relationships, and we don't follow through on ultimately what's most important to us there too. So I would say, to recap, when we're not comparing, the quality of life, even if the quality of how we experience life increases, even if nothing changes, we don't necessarily have the promotion yet, or there's still, you know, the messy back room, you know, isn't all decorated yet. But we can just take away this layer of judgment. And that is like the world reorganizing itself for us, actually. Mm. Like I said, it doesn't have to be punch the air, skip through a meadow, everything's transformed. It's this zone of contentment, which that's where I want to live. Like my word of the year is snuggle. This is the year of the snuggle for me. I'm very happy to be in contentment. I might stick my big toe out of my comfort zone because I've got a new idea and I'm thinking, all right, this could be quite fun to do, but I'm a bit scared. Fine. But as soon as my big toe is out, I want to remove it. I want to bring it back to the zone of contentment because I'm just not sure. Like, of course, we want to be using our ambition and we want to have aspirations. We want to be going after what feels exciting. But comparison makes us look outside ourselves too and not realise everything that we've got going right now, everything we can be thankful for right now, all the experiences that have built who we are right now, the friends we already have, the progress we're already making, even if it might feel small or slow. Actually, if you can take comparison keeps us almost like in the middle distance. If you can bring your focus to who you are, like in the space, like if you were to put your hands out in the air, and like almost like draw a circle around you, like a zorb or like an orb there. Thinking about all the things that occupy that space, your skills, your friendships, how good you are at cooking your friend's favourite meal. Actually, you did get a compliment at work. You have had a good idea. That training, you could afford it if you were sensible with your funds next week. There's actually a lot in play, which is working towards you being your most you already. But unfortunately, we're often in the middle distance there. So when we're not comparing, bringing back in our own zorb, and our own kind of sphere of influence can be incredibly powerful and a really fun place to hang out, actually.
Yeah, I'm absolutely loving everything you're saying, because it's so true. In reference to Greta, it's like you want to be strong-minded and ambitious. But I think that can often be misconstrued that it has to happen in the public and in the exterior and in the bright lights. But say, you know, I'm a very driven person, so maybe I use that drive actually to go downstairs now, do all the washing up, tidy up, so that tonight on a Friday night, but when it comes to this evening, we have a lovely night, not necessarily thinking of like these big plans to change the world, but you know, putting it within my little world that will have such quick, direct, positive impacts. But it feels so, yeah.
And that, you know, like you might put on your favorite radio station or put on a podcast you like, and like set an alarm, be like, I'm doing this in 10 minutes, I'm getting as far as I can, then I'm off to go get coffee, whatever it is. But it's like, I'm gonna make it a positive choice here, you know, if I get to choose again. Because again, it's like when it gets to 6 o'clock and there's, you know, bags on the table, shoes everywhere. What is with the shoes? Everyone's shoes are everywhere, you know, etc. And there's kind of, you know, and there's not a clean fork anywhere. To know it's like that future self says thank you. Well, future self is only 4 hours from now. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't have to be 3 years.
No. But it's so true to bring it all a bit closer. And also I really encourage, increasingly, it's not for public consumption. And that is the trap of social media, of like what you think people are doing, what you're seeing. The best things are the things that happen just, behind closed doors with people completely, you care about.
Completely. And we need a reminder of that. And that's where I'm kind of grateful to be like an anxious millennial, because I do remember what it was like without social media. Mm. And yet, like, my stepson, who's like 23, does not. Saoirse won't. And it's like we've got to remember we live here. The phone is just a portal somewhere else.
Well, Lucy, thank you for your time, because I knew it would be this, but a check-in with you always like gives me a little reminder. And I'm sure we're similar in that we do a lot of this work, and as we referenced earlier with motherhood, doesn't mean that it's always being applied left, right and center, and it's sometimes good to kind of put that bottle back in.
Absolutely, Clemmy. And that's the thing. It's like that stuff, if you'll excuse the clumsy language, that stuff is there to help us in life. I am not interested in being any sort of guru and putting myself on a pedestal. You know, it's the fact that there is like, it's a spiral staircase. I find myself in the same sort of spot, but looking down at a different angle. I'm like, right, there's always more to learn. This is going to potentially be a lifelong thing. Okay, fine. I can put the pressure down of having to sort this out, heal this by lunchtime, because you've got to go and do this. I think that's it. I've really kind of realised, and something that I say a lot, but like my pace is the pace for this. And, you know, if I can still experience these things and remain committed to trying my best to continue to like heal them, that's the big assignment, not getting to the other side of it. And like you say, very much when it comes to comparison free, that's the aim for point. I never expect to get there, ever expect to get there. But I reckon I can get within kind of like close GPS.
Yeah, exactly. And so that, I think with any of this healing work, which is slightly cringe language, I think the more you get to sit in the place where your nervous system is happy and you're more contentment, you're better able to spot the other bits. It's interesting. So I'm moved out of London now, and I go back like usually once a week, and boy, my body can't handle it. My nervous system is so overwhelmed. And I was like, how did I live like this for 12 years? And it's a similar thing. It's like that can become your norm. And it's only when you edge away that you can be better at spotting it.
And again, it can be like, you know, when people, if, and let's use the word if people decide to change where they live, there's an element of like the FOMO of like, this is so much part of who I am. Like I used to live, before I moved here 4 years ago, I lived in Brighton. I remember I just, I just sort of fell out of love with it, and I can't put my finger on it. It was nothing Brighton did. I just fell out of love with it. And we looked at, you know, we realised we were going to move, and we didn't know where that was going to be. And the FOMO crept in, all you know, well, where are you going to get a turmeric latte? And there's loads of arts things and activism things going on here and all this. And, you know, it's such a big part of who I am, saying I live here, which is quite confronting, actually. And then I kind of had a bit of a word of myself eventually, which was, it's not my postcode job to make me a well-rounded, like, voracious liver of life. It's not my postcode job to do that. It's not Six Music's job to teach me what music I should like. You know, it's not this person or this place's job to tell me what I like to eat. It's that falls to me. And if I can only be that person in a certain postcode, there's more going on here than me wanting to move. And that's not what I want. And so I totally hear you. I'm not in a place of like going to London or going to Manhattan thinking, how do people do this? I definitely feel like I know I could do this once, but I also realised that I probably was running out of steam 2 years before I realised that too. And literally no judgment. I wouldn't even rule out going back. I really, really wouldn't. But I know the move for me was about so much more than just like whether I could get a quick coffee. And it's one of the best cities in the world. You'll never hear me say that it's not. It's one of the best cities in the world. But there came a point when I was like, what is this taking from me in order for me to get to say, oh, of course, I work in London, but, you know, I live in Brighton. And that was, you know, my ego did not like that. Did not like that at all. That's probably a whole podcast episode, isn't it, mate?
Yeah,
in terms of unpicking the resistance that goes into it.
Yeah, in fact, it's funny you should say that. It was the first time recently where someone asked me where I lived and I couldn't answer London. I realised how I usually felt when I said London, because it comes with gravitas, it's a capital city, it's like global and multicultural, and aren't I finger on the pulse? And then I live in an amazing coastal town, but it's just like, oh yeah, that you're right, it's part of your identity. It's a whole different conversation, but it's very interesting.
Yeah, same with like other jobs I've done as well. Like, you know, when I was working in, oh yeah, well, I'm actually working on a project for LVMH at the moment and all this, it's like, oh, just can't cool it. Cool your tits, babes. Do you know what I mean? Okay. Whole different conversation.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So, Luce, two questions before we end. Number one, where can people find you, and what like work stuff do you want to shout about?
All right. Well, I'm over on the gram at Lucy Sheridan, and I've got to say, don't no judgment. I'm loving LinkedIn right now. Like, the conversation on LinkedIn is different. LinkedIn is giving me vibes of Instagram 5 years ago. In terms of how that's something like 80% of people, there's something like only 7% of people with a LinkedIn account actually post. So the conversations I'm having over there are being reached by, you know, my stuff is being reached by way more people in that community. The conversations I'm having are really fun and, you know, full of exchange and conversation, because it's reaching, I'm genuinely reaching more people and they're seeing more of my stuff. LinkedIn knows what it is. It's not trying to be anything else but a professional platform. So if you've got stuff to sell or stuff to promote, or you want to share an experience, people want to hear it. If you're not doing that, you're not taking part. Whereas on Instagram, it's like, oh, you know, well, am I allowed to? And it just like, look, I've been encouraging loads of my friends to get back on it, because yes, it can be a bit awkward and corporate, but actually, like anything, be the change you want to see. So bring your tone. Remember, it is like definitely got, you know, strong professional vibes, but you know, there's easy to share personally on there too. So I am all about LinkedIn too. So just go to Lucy Sheridan. I've got a denim jacket on in my picture. So that's where I'd say find me over there too, because just the conversations are completely different, and it made me realize how much moaning and groaning is going on Instagram. We just have to release the fact it's never going to be what it was 5 years ago, and let's all remember that we get to choose where we spend our time.
And also, you know, it's easy to say, oh, LinkedIn's corporate stuff, but actually maybe it's nice to go to work and post in, not in a professional fake way, but like, here's my work. Actually, you don't need to know about
also, Clemmy, it's like LinkedIn is like 8 till 6. No one's really scrolling LinkedIn at 10 p.m. at night or like going live. They're just like chatting. So if you're in like in the daytime, it's a very sociable place. Highly recommend.
I've really taken that on board. Well, I never. You're on to something. I am literally going to do that straight away. That's how sad I am. Okay. And my last question is always, if you could have an honest conversation with one person, who would it be and what would you say?
Oh, wow. Do you know, I think I would actually go back to the boss who gave me that feedback and be like, here's what I get from it now, but here, and I get it, and actually I can see the gift of it now, and it has fueled me. But at the time, it felt hurtful and confusing. And actually felt like you weren't on my side when we were a really good team together, you know. And it's a shame, because we did have a really good friendship as well. It's not just for that reason that unfortunately it didn't go ahead, you know, life happens, etc. But, you know, if I'm gonna speak the truth, even though my voice shakes, I think it would be going back to that boss and being like, you know, just want you to know that, like, your words have power, you're a powerful person, and your opinion matters, and this is how it influenced, you know, what happened to follow that. I don't know, you know, I don't think there's any, I don't believe in closure, to be honest. I don't think that's a helpful place to try and get to, but I think that would give me a little bit of relief to share that. So maybe I'll email him on LinkedIn.
Yeah, this is it. I feel like this is definitely something, the universe is ticking something. And you know what? He'll be absolutely oblivious.
Yeah.
Won't he? He will not know. Yeah, I mean, more than likely anyway. It's just like these things that get dropped in our brains, especially in those kind of formative times, that end up shaping us. And the person who said it has no idea.
There you go. I'm
going to
definitely sit with this,
Clemmy.
Yeah.
Yeah, just see. I mean, even if you write the DM to him and never send it, I wonder if it'll reveal something to him.
I think that is a good exercise to do. Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's something I need to take on, definitely.
Well, Luce, it's been everything I hoped. And I'm genuinely, genuinely so glad to hear that you're... things are feeling brighter for you, and moving towards spring. It's got to be good.
Yeah, I really received that so tenderly, and thanks so much for thinking of me to get me in for this conversation. So, as always, always thought-provoking, always different. Like, you know, I love talking about comparison, but I always know you'll come in from an angle I just wasn't expecting, and it's always just so lovely to spend time with you. So thank you so much, darling.
I hope we cross paths in real life in the Big Smoke at some point.
Well, I'll be off this hill soon, so maybe we can on your day in London, I'll be like Babe Pig in the city, as my friend Sarah says, clinging to a vending machine at Euston Station. Will you come and get me, please? And we'll go to Pret.
That's how I feel. I've lived there for 12 years and I suddenly am like being really rubbish on the tube. It's like, how is all this information that was so known to me? I'm just like, where are these people going? What are they doing?
I'm like, how much of this talks to me anything?
Yes, we should do that. That would be lovely. Thank you. Well, the thing about doing a podcast is sometimes you're kind of booking guests for the overall good and trying to get them so they sit in the run of a series, which is definitely what I wanted to do with comparison. But also, there can be a quite selfish endeavour where you just want an hour's chat with somebody that you think is interesting or that you haven't caught up with for a while. And Lucy definitely falls into both camps, but I knew my conversation with her would be good because I just love the way she frames things in that kind of real big sister relatable energy. That makes, you go, oh, right, yeah, I really get it. And that's how I felt whenever I've heard her talk about comparison. As I said during the interview, I really didn't think it was something that was very big for me or relevant. And then once I opened my eyes to it, I was like, hold up, this is definitely something that weaves its way through my life. So I really urge you to go and have a look at that and go and follow Lucy and see her life up on the hill. She's got a couple of lovely golden retrievers and is full of wisdom. And that's it. That's another episode of But Why. Thank you so much for listening. I'd really appreciate any ratings, reviews, sharing the episodes, and for you to come and follow us at @butwhy_podcast on Instagram. I am off to, this is going to make me sound extremely middle-aged, get some curtains altered